BOAG World is produced by headscape.co.uk. It's brought to you by Shopify, an e-commerce solution made by designers for designers. For information, visit shopify.com/BOAG World. On this week's show, we talk to Brett Welsh about the business of web design, and Paul chats with Ryan Taylor about creating a buzz.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul and Marcus.
Hello, and welcome to the first ever BOAGworld.com podcast.
BOAG World.
Hello, welcome to the 100th episode of BOAG World.
Hello and welcome to the 177th episode of BOAGworld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. And we're back!
Hello, stranger.
I know, it's been so long since we've been together.
Well, we were together last week.
Why do you say it like that?
Well, you started it.
Well, yes.
And we went to a conference last week.
Yes, which Ryan and Paul seem to imply that it's because we couldn't be bothered to do the podcast. We were at work, but we were at a conference, which is why we didn't do it.
Yeah, it was just good, but I caught the nasty lurgy.
You got swine flu, haven't you?
I don't know. I really don't know. I was not myself last Friday and Saturday, so I've never felt like that before.
Ooh. Contagious man.
Keep I'm away. All right now. I'm just making funny noises, coughing a lot.
Ah.
I have a really deep voice.
That's all that. Yeah, but that's the cigarettes.
I haven't smoked, apart from one since last Thursday.
Oh, well done, Marcus.
Well, no, but that's, you know, if you smoke, you tend to do it quite a lot.
So, anyway, I don't know why we're here, really. There was a tweet from Dan on Twitter. I'm watching you, Dan. He said, decided I like the BOAG World podcast much more, not just more, when Stanton and Ryan Havoc host it. Odd. That's really insulting.
Yeah, but what can you say?
Screw you, Dan. How about that?
There you go, yeah. Once you get over the silly accents, I suppose they're quite good.
No, they are good, actually. I've quite enjoyed the last couple of weeks. It's nice having a web design podcast I can listen to.
Yeah.
Not that I'm implying I can't listen to all the other excellent web design podcasts out there.
Mm, yeah. Hole digging hole. Yeah. Do you know, that reminds me, actually. Mm-hmm. We were going to do a joint podcast with Rissington. What's happened with that?
I think they were trying to get out of it, really.
You reckon?
I think they just politely agreed to doing it, but they didn't really
they
want
didn't
it.
Want to. They so haven't... any excuse not no. to. Yeah. Do you want to do this day? No.
It's they like... don't seem to. They seem to have stopped.
Maybe they've got work to do.
Could be. Talking of work to do, we're a bit stretched at the moment, aren't we?
Just a bit.
As we've just had a resourcing meeting. Mm-hmm. So if you are a freelance web designer out there, and if you think you're damn good, then we don't want to know you, because that's just arrogant. But if you're a freelance web designer, we are actually looking for some help on a couple of little projects, really. So if you are interested, drop me an email at paul@boagworld.com. Normal skill set applies, really good CSS, really good HTML, really good design, and a good understanding of usability. And we might even get you doing a bit of wireframing, that kind of stuff. So a good understanding of user experience design would be useful as well. We don't want much, really.
No, well, I think there's Flash in there as well.
If you could do Flash, that's a bonus as well, although not 100% necessary. Drop me an email, paul@boagworld.com. Have we got any more kind of pointless announcements and advertising and stuff? I'm going to do a bit more advertising later.
Are you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not with it at all. I can't
string
it. I had a
today.
Sales call this morning that was frankly embarrassing.
Oh, dear.
It's one of those,
so we're never going to win that then.
I just could not string a sentence together.
That's bad.
So it's pig flu has killed my brain cell.
Ah, that sounds like a tabloid headline. I like the brain cell singular as well. Yeah. Okay, should we do it and move on to the news then?
Yeah.
Have you noticed how efficiently we're moving through things? It's good. Compared to the last couple of weeks, boy, they waffle. They're worse than us.
Really?
Yeah. Have you not listened to them?
No.
Just solid waffle for like an hour plus. There's no actual content. It's just waffle.
Yeah, well, that's... we've got jobs to do.
Yeah, we're busy
stuff
people.
Like that.
Yes. Something. Mm. So, news. I feel like I'm being very rude to Stanton and
yeah, after they very kindly helped us out.
I know.
Hugely.
They're a bit of heroes. Really. Yes. I do like them a lot.
And yes, I need to get... I was supposed to do my interview with Ryan last week about...
He's getting quite offended.
Every time.
I know.
You know, oh no, so yes, I can do it. No, I can't. No, honestly, there was no way in the world I could have done that last week.
I think you should have. It would have been much funnier. Because it's on video as well, so there have been snot streaming out your nose, red eyes, yeah.
Well, there's no reason to why I can't do it tomorrow. Tomorrow being Thursday. Yes, we are doing it, actually recording and publishing on the same day.
I know. We live on the edge. Right. Should we do the news then? After saying we don't waffle. Right. Our first news story is about embeddable web fonts. There's been a lot of excitement in the world of embeddable web fonts recently.
No, we have talked about this before.
Yeah. It doesn't look like it's going to be long before we're going to be able to have custom fonts on our websites, which is really cool. So we've already have the likes of Qfon. Do you say Qfon? C-U-F-O-N.
Yeah.
It's Qfon. Sounds very pretentious. But we, which is a huge improvement on the Flash-based cipher technique and uses clever stuff, vectory things. But no, we've been doing some experiments with that recently, and it's really good. So definitely check that out if you haven't already. But ultimately, that's not kind of embeddable web fonts, is it? That's just a technique to get your fonts onto your website. But there is also Jeff Veen's type kit coming soon, which we've talked about in the past, and this promises to give us access to a large number of fonts using nothing more than the CSS font face tag and some JavaScript as well. So that's pretty cool. However, this week we have seen some competition to Typekit announced by none other than Clear Left.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you?
Yes.
Font Deck.
Yes.
It's called. And it looks like it's going to be a direct competitor to Typekit. The rumor is that it will differ from Typekit, however, because it won't rely on JavaScript, which is quite interesting if that is true. Exactly how it's going to work is currently unclear.
Magic.
There is a magic fairies are going to bring your font to your website through the interweb.
Yes.
It also appears that they're going to use some kind of caching technology, a bit similar to the caching approach that Google Code now offer for JavaScript libraries. So once a font has been downloaded once to somebody's machine, then they'll every time you'll be able to get it, which is really good. You won't have to keep re-downloading it because fonts are quite chunky and it can take a while to download. It's like with Typekit, for example. I've seen a demo of it, and there is a definite flash where you see the web safe font, and then it has to download the real font, and it takes time to do that, so you see one, and then, yeah, which is a bit pants. So hopefully, Font Deck might overcome that problem, at least for some people. Although Font Deck appears to be arriving a little late to the party, ultimately it's going to come down to who's got the best selection of fonts. Until we know that, there's going to be no clear winner. So it'd be interesting to see how things work out. That said, judging by an article on Think Vitamin, Typekit looks pretty impressive. The article demonstrates how Typekit will work, and I have to say, it looks very straightforward. Unsurprisingly, for an application developed by Jeff Veen, it is incredibly well designed. However, like I already said, it's not perfect. The demo page, for example, does show that significant delay as custom fonts are loaded. And so you see the web safe font until it's loaded it. So it will be, that's a bit worrying to me because, you know, if they're already having that problem now, just on a demo page, you know, once hundreds of websites start doing it, then there's going to be a real load on the server. So I'm hoping that they're going to deal with their server capacity issues. I'm sure they are.
Isn't it? This, that's like you say, it's kind of like, think of average web user who kind of isn't thinking, all they're concerned about is, does this work?
Yeah.
And yes, you do want to obviously promote the brand, and part of the brand is a decent font, etc. So I'm well behind
the principle.
But if it's slow and it's just going
to
put people
off. It's the fact that your web page is constantly having to call to a third party site. And so it's going to be really important how quickly that that third-party site responds. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it all works out. I am excited about it as well. I think it's going to be really good. But, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions.
But we care a lot more than most people. That's the what I'm trying to say.
Yes. But we also care about delays a lot more than most people, maybe. I don't know.
Don't know on that one.
Anyway, if you want to see Typekit in action, then if you go along to boagwall.com/podcast/177, there's a link in the show notes to the Think Vitamin article. Right, moving forward, moving on, we come to, well, the subject of web design moving forward and moving on, actually.
Really?
Yes. Web design has come a long way since the grey backgrounds and blue and purple links of just a few years ago. Someone asked me recently to whether I would send them a copy of the first ever website that I built, which unfortunately I don't have, but I wouldn't have sent it to them anyway because it was grey backgrounds, blue and purple links, and a centred image, and that was about it. Yeah, so but
images,
cool. Oh yeah,
you started late then.
Yes, but I mean, things have come a long way, you know. It's not been long, is it, really, if you think about it, how quickly things have moved forward. And there's a new question, I guess, which is where do we go from here, which is a topic tackled by Jennifer Farley in Art Direction, Taking Web Design to the Next Level. And as you can guess from the title, Jennifer answer to the question, where do we go from here, is Art Direction. And Art Direction, amongst other things, is the process of bringing together design and content. And this is something that has been sadly lacking from modern web design. I think we've touched on before on the show.
Many times.
Oh, have we? Am I boring everybody now?
No. I think, well, it's my sort of pet thing.
It's your pet thing, is it?
We concentrate too much on the look of sites, the usability of sites, but not enough on the fundamental stuff, which is what they're about and why they exist.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, this in particular is talking about the relationship between the content that goes into a website and the design of the website itself. And I've got to say, that's the downside of content management systems, where you're just churning out templates. You know, basically most of the design work, I think most web designers do, is built around a series of templates that's incorporated into a content management system. And really there's little customization of the design based on the content of each page. So Jennifer shares some examples of sites that endeavor to move beyond that template mentality and introduce some real art direction. And they're definitely worth looking at, as they will inspire you to kind of look beyond template design. And Jennifer's article is not the only post that encourages us to change our approach to design. There's also another post this week from 37 Signals entitled Stop Following Direction and Start Designing. And it's a post that encourages designers to view feedback from clients as suggestions rather than solutions. And the author writes, when you're getting direction from a client, manager, art director, etc., it is easy to fall into the mode of just following instructions. You get so caught up in getting it right that you forget to keep thinking about the problem. Of course, it's totally understandable to take the idea of those that are paying the bill as gospel, but we should also be reminded that the same people hired us for our expertise. Really good statement, but very easy to say, especially if you work for a company that doesn't have clients like 37 Signals.
Yeah.
That said, it's good advice and we should be taking it on board. So there you go. That's that one.
Yeah.
What's yeah mean?
Depends on the client, doesn't it?
It does. And your relationship with that client.
Yeah. And what they're like as people and what their skill level is to a certain extent.
Yes.
You have to take all these things on board.
Well, we had an interesting one, didn't we, that I did an audio boo about yesterday.
Well, yeah, and it's not the only one we've had recently as well.
But in that particular case, we had a situation where they had an in-house web design team. And one of their designers produced a design and sent it through. And your immediate reaction as a designer is, oh, to feel threatened by that. But actually, if you follow the advice of 37 Signals and you don't take that as a you should do this, but as suggestions, which is what this designer meant it as, is just to start the conversation. You know, designers think visually, and so it was easier for him to do something visual than it was to, you know, to explain what he had in mind. then that's fine if you just take it as, you know, as suggestions. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Anyway, next post is my favourite of the week, which is 50 scientifically proven ways to be more persuasive.
Right, okay.
It's not strictly to do with web design, but it does provide lots of advice that can be applied to those trying to nudge users in a certain direction. So it is a very good one. Definitely worth reading. You ought to read it as someone that does sales.
No, because it's all magic.
It's all magic.
Can't put science on things like that.
Yeah. You don't use sales techniques, do you? You just talk to people, which is good.
Yes. Technique number 75.
Yes. I'm now going to do this to you. Yeah, it's nothing worse than salespeople. It's like whenever I go to buy, because I've been sent on sales courses before. Have you ever been sent on sales courses?
Yes, of course I have.
And you go to buy a car or something.
They make you feel slightly ill.
Yeah, usually. They do, don't they? And dirty.
Yes.
You want to scrub yourself after it. And, you know, like last time I went to buy a car and I sat there going, oh, just shut up. I know what you're doing. Let's just move on from this and, you know, talk about it sensibly. Anyway, that's not what this is about. It's not really about that kind of effect. It's about, I don't think any of the techniques that it talks about will kind of bully anybody into doing anything, but it kind of nudges them in the right direction or, yeah, shows them some of the possibilities. It's techniques for, you know, suggesting. I'll give you an example. So we all know about the herd effect, the fact that, you know, we all like to do what other people do. So for example, it's not uncommon to see a product, an e-commerce site have popular products listed because they know that people go, well, if everybody else has bought them, then they must be good.
Where's mine?
Yeah. And there's also, you know, on charity sites, they have, well, the average person gives this amount, you know. This has become a popular trend, I guess, because people are tend to be led by the crowd. However, this particular post suggests that you actually go a little bit further, and it suggests that you personalize the kind of the herd effect. And so they say, however, it gives an example of hotel. And a hotel sign in the bathroom that informs guests that many prior guests chose to be environmentally friendly in recycling their towels. You know, you see it a lot, However, when the message mentioned that the majority of guests who stayed in that specific room were more environmentally conscious and recycled their towels, the towel recycling jumped by 33% by making it more personal and closer. I mean, the message was largely the same, but just by, you know, making it more personal, it had a bigger effect. So instead of referring to popular products, you would say other users that bought your product also bought this, you know, which is an approach that you see regularly on sites like Amazon. So this is just one example of a massive list included in the post. It's a real wealth of knowledge that is applicable to almost all aspects of web design, from information architecture right the way through copywriting. So check that one out. It's a really good one.
I will.
Yeah, I think you'd like it. It's the kind of one that you would actually read. Unlike our final subject, which is the continued confusion between HTML5 and XHTML2.
I did actually read up. I read Jeremy Keith's explanation of this.
What, the cartoon version?
No, not the cartoon. I did make me giggle. I did look at that. But no, I read his actual article on his actual blog.
Ooh. So the last few weeks, there's been lots of discussion about HTML5 and the demise of XHTML2. And there's been a lot of division and confusion over what designers and developers should be doing. Some say that we should be abandoning XHTML1 and moving to HTML4. You know, should we be trying to adopt HTML5, even though it's in draft? It's all very confusing. And I have to admit, I was unsure myself. Fortunately, as you said, there's some excellent advice out there, and Jeremy Keith's post is a really good one. There's also some one by Bruce Lawson, and Drew McClellan has contributed some interesting points into the discussion as well. The problem is that it's all pretty turgid stuff, and it's a bit of a pain to wade through it all. So the good news is you don't have to. Thanks to Brad and his cartoon. You've got to see this to believe it. He's turned the whole discussion into a very easy to follow and beautifully designed comic strip. Jeremy Keith's post. Just seeing Jeremy in cartoon form is more than you could ever hope for, really, isn't it? It just really made me smile. So if you want to know whether you should be closing your tags or whether you should start supporting HTML5 now, then pop over to Smashing Magazine and take a look at this comic strip. It won't ruin the end, because obviously you don't want to have the story ruined. But suffice it to say, you're not going to need to be changing the way you code anytime soon. So that's all good news. So there we go. Interview.
Yes.
Which is an interview recorded at Future Web Design.
Yeah.
We're going to be recording some more interviews soon, aren't we? We're doing Deconstruct, and then we've got Future Web Apps coming up, and we're going to be interviewing people at both of those. So we're going to have some good interviews coming up. We're going to have more interviews than you can shake a stick at. I think we might have to change the way the show works a little bit, because we've got so many interviews now, we're never going to get through them all.
Yeah, and people start saying things that they don't believe in anymore.
Yeah, because they'll be out of date.
We did this interview a year ago.
And it's no longer relevant or up to date. Now, I've got a huge highlighted bold message from Ryan saying, try to remember to thank the transcribers. Got told off by Ryan. I have to say, in my defence, the only time I don't thank the transcribers is where I don't have the transcription by the time it's been recorded, so I don't know who the transcriber is. So get stuffed, Ryan. Yes. So I've got to thank Curtis this week for transcribing the show. I'm grateful to you, Curtis, not to Ryan.
Okay.
He said in a snotty voice. So anyway, here's our interview with Brett Welsh on the subject of the business of web design. So joining me is Brett Welsh. Good to have you on the show.
Good to be here.
Thank you for agreeing to do this at very short notice, because I didn't notice your talk. We're still at Future of Web Design. I'm still interviewing people here. You're going to get bored of me saying that, because I'm doing loads of them. I didn't notice your talk on the lineup, so I almost missed you entirely. And I didn't hear you either. So I haven't heard what you said. But I've had lots of people come up to me saying, you are interviewing Brett, right? He was really good. So you obviously went down very well, which is good.
That's good to hear, yeah.
So because I missed it, what did you talk about?
Okay, so I talked about how designers can go beyond pushing pixels and start to create more effective websites for their clients.
Okay.
And so I talked about the business end of web design, which, you know, a lot of the time gets ignored at conferences like this.
Sure does, yeah.
And I think it's also really important, because that's where the money flows into their pockets.
Yeah.
So when it comes to actually getting the client on board and that sort of process, that's a really important part that I thought needed talking about. So I talked about how designers can do that, and I used an acronym called Buster.
Right. Okay.
And I put a big picture of Busta Rhymes up there, because, you know, if you're into rap and hip hop, you'll know the guy. But not that he's had any hits recently, as far as I know. Buster stands for talk business.
Yeah.
Understand why they want to go online.
Mm-hmm.
Talk strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Talk business targets.
Mm-hmm.
And set an action plan.
Right, okay.
So there's the B-U-S-T-A. Or in one sentence, you can say businesses understand strategy, tactics, and action.
Right.
So altogether, it sort of works as a nice little
coat hanger
for your thinking. And the idea is really to start off by talking about the client's business. What do you do? How long you've been doing it? How do you sell what you sell? And sort of get in the business owner's mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that you need to do to set the tone of what you are going to talk about. Because
yeah.
It's not about a pretty website.
Yeah.
It's about having something that actually is effective for the business owner. Then the next thing is really understanding what they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important, because you may need to dial up their expectations or dial down their expectations.
Okay.
Sometimes people, if they've read a few blogs, they think they're an expert. They think that they can take it to the next level really easily. And sometimes you need to slow that down a bit and say, hold on, you're not going to be Amazon overnight.
Yeah.
You need to take it slow. Other guys are going to be a bit timid.
Yeah.
I don't really know much about this website stuff. And that's where you need to sort of hold their hand a bit and guide them to understanding how excited they should be.
Yeah.
So the next part is strategy. And strategy is I made a big point about the fact that strategy is not a dirty word.
Yeah.
It's really just about connecting the dots between their website and their business.
Okay.
So it's about understanding how you can achieve the goals that you want to achieve through their website.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing about strategy is really helping them understand what they can achieve and showing them how they can achieve it with concrete targets.
Okay.
And that's where T comes in.
Right.
So T is your targets.
Yeah.
And there, I think you need to set 3 to 5 concrete targets, mm-hmm. that business targets that actually relate directly to things like revenues and customer leads,
okay.
things like not traffic. I actually made a point of saying not traffic, because traffic doesn't mean anything until you understand what your conversions are like.
Yeah.
Because business owners, it's great to say 1,000 people came to my website, but if you're not actually getting leads out of that that are captured in some sort of database, or if you're not getting, you're not making money out of the sales, then it's a bit of a, it's an empty number.
Yeah.
And then finally was action. So you need to set some short, medium, and long term goals that you can, and a plan, the tools and the what and the how, really.
Yeah.
How you're going to get there. And so, yeah, I think that was a rough overview of what sort of Buster is all about.
Okay. So what are the benefits of using this kind of approach? Well, you know, as a freelancer, say, if I'm a freelancer, I'm engaging with clients. Why do I need to worry about this kind of stuff? What should it bring me?
I think that even the process, if you look at it from the other point of view, from a business owner's point of view, it's still an important one to go through.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize you probably need a marketing plan for your website.
Yeah.
Because how else are you going to get people to view it? You know, it's just like opening a bricks and mortar store.
Sure.
You need to put in the same amount of effort and ongoing sort of effort to get a result. So I think the why is really more effective websites.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about what you're doing in a business oriented way, you're going, what's going to come out in the other end is going to be much more refined and polished representation of what you are hoping to achieve. It's going to work better for you. I think you get, from a freelance point of view, you get less arguments with clients.
Yeah, okay.
Because you can really say, they say, I don't like that blue, and you can say, well, that blue will get you better conversions.
Right. So you're going back to the stuff you established.
Exactly. You established it already, so you can link it back. And I mean, obviously you need to have a valid link.
Yeah.
You can't just make things up.
But you can try.
You can try. The real key thing is you can close arguments off by the silly ones anyway.
Yeah.
By saying, hey, look, this is better for these reasons, and
so it moves,
trust me.
The way that we often talk about it is it moves away from personal opinion of I don't like this
exactly.
color to, well, this color comes out of this set of things that we agreed up front.
Exactly. Mm. It's drawn from this business goal.
Mm.
And yeah, and then the other ones, I mean, you get repeat business because you've set that action plan. You've got long-term, medium-term goals that they're going to link back to you. So once your first section's done and they sort of go, well, this is working well, then they can come, they go, well, who's the next person to talk to? And it's just obviously the same person because you've had that action plan. Like
yeah.
That.
It's interesting that we went up to a pitch, didn't we, on, was it Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
And it was for quite a small little job, a design job. And so we went through this pitch and we outlined, you know, what it was we're doing. We got to a point in the pitch where we said, but if this is as far as you're going to go, don't hire us. You know, if you're only looking in short-term views of this immediate project, then we're not the right people for you. But here's where we think you should be going over the long term. And I think ultimately that's really beneficial because it means that, you know, you're going to get that long-term business that you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people want to know what's next.
Yeah.
And I think being able to answer that question, what's next, is really a key to making them come back to you when the time is to implement what's next.
How far do you think you can go on that, mind? Because, I mean, we do a lot of work with public sector clients, and I remember sitting in one meeting where they wanted to establish a 5-year plan for their website, which to me seemed, you know, unrealistically far ahead. But,
yeah.
I mean, is, you know, what kind of, how far do you go with things like that?
It's, if you can imagine 5 years ahead, I think, congratulations. And I think that's great. The main thing is not so much how far you can think ahead. I think it's really the exercise of thinking ahead that is most valuable. Whether it's a 6-month, 12-month, or a 2-year or 5-year plan, you know, however far you can get, then that's great because you probably have a fantastic imagination. I cannot imagine what it, right now Twitter is big. In 5 years, who knows what it's going to
exactly,
be that you're going to be using to, and you can't work those into your plan.
Yeah.
But it's great to sort of sketch something rough out for as far as you can think ahead.
Yeah.
But I think it's really the exercise that makes it's the process that makes it more effective, more polished, and gives you, and the outcome just becomes more effective in sort of in the wash.
What you don't cover in that that Buster analogy is you don't talk about user, you know, testing stuff with users and using user feedback as a tool to convince clients to do a particular thing. Or I'm guessing that's part of your process as well.
Well, I think that's really important. It's not specifically part of Buster because the usability is, you know, I mean, you can stand
it would ruin the whole.
I think that when you talk about two things, targets, well, three things, strategy, targets, and action.
Yeah.
Those last two, if you're going to achieve the targets you want to achieve, then that's where you need to be, you know, and the action plan. Doing that testing and having that usability side of things is a really important part of sort of making sure you can achieve those,
yeah,
those goals. I'm a big fan of usability testing, and I read your article on it on Think Vitamin.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
I thought it was like, what was it?
I can't remember. I write so many.
It was like it was like cheap, you know, easy usability.
Oh yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. Yes, I remember the one.
And that was fantastic. And I tweeted it. It's the sort of thing that yeah, I definitely believe in. It fits in under the sort of the actions and the targets.
Yeah.
Because targets are about conversions, and actions is about how you're going to get those conversions. Mm. Mm. And I think that usability is really a big part in working out those conversions. Mm. I mean, it's like supermarkets, they have the aisles and they put the products in the right places because, you know, they want the kid to scream about chocolate at the last minute.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all well thought out, and that is essentially on a different level. It is usability. It's,
yeah, yeah.
It's arranging things in a way so that the client behaves the way you, or the customer, end customer, behaves the way you want them to behave.
Yeah.
The visitor behaves the way you want them to behave. So I think it's an essential part of the process, but I didn't fit it into the, you know.
You can only fit so much in.
That's
in,
right,
in,
yeah.
That
and only 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It was very impressive within 10 minutes. I mean, obviously there are real benefits to using this approach in regards to convincing clients of stuff, as we've already said. You,
yeah,
know, you can,
yeah,
say, well, we've gone with this color because of, you know, these reasons, etc. But do you think there's also a value from a sales point of view in
totally,
terms of upselling yourself and giving yourself more credibility and value?
Absolutely. And that's that was the final point that I didn't manage to get to,
right,
about why you'd follow a process like this. And it's simply higher profits.
Yeah.
Because you are, I mean, what I'm saying is nothing particularly new or groundbreaking. It's really just a sort of simple process that helps you get your head around these things so that you're able to more effectively communicate how valuable what you do is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And basically end up with a more effective result, which sort of is a feedback loop, right?
Yeah.
If you do something, you sound like you do something well, you do something well. And then it sort of feeds back and they'll tell their friends, and that's almost like a sort of marketing thing for, mm-hmm, yourself. So I think that having that process is, it really is just about being able to upsell and justify.
Yeah.
You know, in the problem that we've got right now, and I talked about this briefly in the talk as well, is that design is becoming a commodity.
Mm.
People view design as a commodity, and that's a real shame. It is about upselling. It's about selling yourself the value you have and effectively communicating what you do,
mm-hmm,
in a way that puts it in the right light, so, mm, that people are willing to pay the money for it.
It also, yeah, makes you seem like more of the expert.
That's exactly it.
I mean, we actually tell people, we say, you know, we're not doing this. Obviously, we feel this is the right thing for you to do, the right thing for your business to take this kind of consultative approach.
Mm.
But it benefits us as well. We're up front. We tell, yeah, people that it's a benefit to us as well. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, right. I see this is helping everybody.
Yeah, that's so right. I think there's two things. One of the key questions that we have right now that every freelance has to ask himself is, are you worth it? Are you worth your cost?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the two things that are worth it are strategy, mm-hmm, being strategic, and being an expert, because, mm-hmm, experts know things that you don't.
Yeah.
And if you can get both of those things into your pitch, then whatever you do, you're already put yourself on a different plateau.
Yeah.
So I think that's where you really, and we tell this to our designers, or we have a large community of resellers for Good Barry.
Right.
And we tell them all the time, like, we have training sessions, and we always talk about making sure that you really lay out what they want to do, how they're going to do it, and link it back to their business so that you can really put yourself at that expert level,
yeah,
and it justifies your cost at the end of the day.
I think there's also an issue here of the fact that clients like to be reassured. They, you know, when you're buying from somebody, you want to be reassured that this person knows what they're doing and they're,
yeah,
in control.
It's about trust and credibility.
Yeah. And I think having a methodology and an approach which, you know, you work through and has, you know, all of the different things that you've just outlined,
mm,
I think gives clients that reassuring feeling that, oh yeah, these guys know what they're doing, they've got an approach and they always use this approach, and, you know, I'm,
that's
comfortable,
right,
in that.
Yeah, and I think that it's not just about the following the process by rote either necessarily. It's about, because each design or each freelance person, each agency has their own specialties.
Yeah, of course.
And there are some, every, but I think at a broad level you can sort of follow it, but then there's some parts where you may dig deeper.
Yeah.
Because that's, mm-hmm, your real expertise, area of expertise. And I think that's, you know, these processes are meant to be used and bent.
Yeah, of course.
And adapted to whatever sort of your situation is.
So where do you think the time is to start talking about these processes? Is it, you know, once the client has signed on the dotted line, you take them through the process, or would you encourage people to be talking about this stuff even at the pitch stage?
I think at the pitch stage. I think when you're pitching, you need to demonstrate, not necessarily tell them the name of your process and what you're following, the methodology, but to actually start going through the process and saying, look, I want to talk about your business and let's do that. And then I want to understand this, why you're going online. And then I'm going to talk to you about strategies we can use. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about targets that work for you. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about how we're going to achieve this.
Yeah.
Just by setting out that roadmap, I think you're already putting yourself miles ahead of everyone else who's gone, right, you know, what sort of colours do you like?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, right in the pitch stage, you don't want to go into too much detail.
Yeah.
I think you have to strike a balance between showing them that you know this stuff really well and that you can really help them achieve these things, mm-hmm. But also leaving enough sort of behind the fence, mm-hmm. so that there's something that they're actually going to pay for. Mm. And that's the trick, is that balance. But I would always fall on more on the side of, you know, making friends with the client and sort of making them understand the process and how effective they can be. Rather than sort of holding too much back. But I think, in the pitch stage.
I mean, I think the other benefit that, talking about this, I mean, I don't know what your attitude is towards this, but it's actually quite a good argument against speculative design work as well. If you're in a position where you're talking to a client and they're asking for speculative design, you can almost say, well, in a way, this isn't the time to do it because I haven't understood your business. We haven't set targets. We haven't, got a strategy here. Mm. So there's a kind of, you can take them through the logic of why it's too early for me to start putting designs in front of you. Is that something you'd agree with?
Totally. Right. I mean, I'm not sure what our official company stance would be.
Right.
Because I don't think we've really talked about it. But on principle, I definitely would agree. And the things that we always, in our reseller training, that we teach stuff like that. Mm. And so I would have to say that, I use 99 Designs as an example.
Oh, did you? Oh, that's where Ryan's comment. I heard Ryan's comment, right?
Because that was, I said design is a commodity, and we broke it down. They had millions of designs and millions of dollars put in there. And you crunch the numbers, and it works out that every design that they've gone and done is worth $2.80.
Right.
You know, and
that's awful. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's like lower than minimum wage.
Yeah.
You can go work at McDonald's and do better than that.
Yeah.
So I think that, I'm not a fan personally of spec design, and I would generally say that what we teach our resellers as part of our training is saying don't go with that. Mm. You want to go in there, understand the business, make sure that you get your head around what they want to do, because your work needs to reflect that.
I mean, I've realised I haven't asked you about Good Barrier at all. What do you guys do? Because I haven't come across you before, I have to confess.
We have a platform for running online businesses, so that means that people are often, when you're going online these days, business owners want to be able to run their website. Email marketing is more and more important.
Yeah.
Selling products and hooking into PayPal, things like that, is harder than it needs to be. And behind all of that, having a CRM database that you can track your customers and mm-hmm. save them in a central place when they submit a web form or interact with your site, however mm-hmm. they interact. We've got a platform that does all of that.
Wow.
So our system does everything that's sort of in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great for web designers because they're able to basically create any design and put it on the system, use all of our functionality without doing any programming.
Cool.
So that's sort of what we sell.
Right.
And we have a reseller program
that
I've talked about a few times. And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Because we get designers on board to become resellers of our product.
Yeah.
And then basically they use the product, they get commissions, and they get a whole bunch of training from us about how to make more money and also how to build, like, practical training about how to use the system.
Value-added stuff.
Yeah, how to be a value-added, a reseller. We not only take you on as a reseller, we want to be able to add value to your clients.
Yeah.
And sort of give you some ideas as to how you can do that.
Interesting business model.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. That
was
really useful.
That was really fun.
And it's nice to hear other people saying similar stuff than we ran on about week in and week out.
That's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah. I saw your talk in Future Web Design, the
New York.
New York.
Educating clients to say yes.
Yes. Yeah. And that really struck a chord. I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. Mm. You know. And so I think we're definitely on the same page.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Cool.
So, that was a good interview with Brett. I'd never met Brett or heard of Brett before.
No.
But he actually talked a lot of sense, and he also talked about all the kinds of things we care a lot about. So indeed. It was a good interview. I enjoyed it very much, even though I'm struggling to remember it because it was so long ago. So there we go. Okay, although I'm not, I may forget to thank our transcribers, and although I'm not grateful to Ryan, I am grateful to our sponsor. Did you notice the link there?
That's just awful.
That is terrible, yes, isn't it? Yes. Now, do you know what? The guys at Shopify, who've been sponsoring the show for a little while now, all they've ever asked for is that little bit that we put on the pre-roll and a banner on the site. And, you know, they pay us a reasonable amount for our sponsorship. So they sent me through a new banner to put on the site and wanted to change the word a bit on the front of the show. And I wrote back to him and said, shall I actually say a bit more about you guys rather than just that fairly nondescript line? So they haven't even asked for this. But I've got to say, I really like the Shopify product. And so over the next few weeks, I'm going to mention a few of the key things that I do like about it. All I want to mention this week is the blog that they've got. They have a blog. And if you go to shopify.com/Boagwoods, you can get to the blog via that. It's worth checking out because they showcase different designs that have been applied on top of Shopify. And whether you're interested in Shopify or not, really nice way of seeing some nice design of e-commerce sites. So if you ever have to design an e-commerce site, check out the Shopify blog because it's got some really nice designs. Also, it shows a massive flexibility of Shopify, blah, blah, blah. I'm not very good at sponsorship stuff.
Yeah, it's quite good. Go and look.
You don't care, do you? It's good. I do care.
He's making it. He cares.
I do care. I do. Shut up. No, we featured Shopify on the show way before they ever wanted to sponsor it.
He's got his wagging finger out.
I have got. Because I do like this. I'm going to use up my dad's site when I actually get around to sorting out his e-commerce. But that's going to be forever. Like, I've got time for that. Anyway, so listener feedback. So we're going to do something a little bit different this week on the show,
okay,
which is that I'm doing some listener feedback with a listener you might know, which is Ryan. Does he still count as a listener?
Of course he does.
Anyway, I explain it all in this next segment, so I'll just play this. So we're going to do something a little bit different for the listener feedback section today. And it's come about because I was chatting with Ryan Taylor via IM, and he asked a particular question, and I nearly turned around to him and said, you can pay on my consultancy clinic for an answer to that question. But then I thought that may be a bit tight of me. So instead I thought, let's talk about that on the show, because it's a really good kind of issue to discuss. And it's a different way of doing the kind of listener feedback. And I think we'll probably do it with some other people in the future as well. So I have Ryan on the show. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, I'm so honoured to meet you. You're the guy that does that podcast, aren't you?
I am. I'm the one that makes sure it doesn't sink like a lead weight.
It's so exciting. I feel quite in awe of this amazing superstar that I have on the show. Can I have your autograph?
Of course. You have to come up here, though. I'm not coming down there.
That's a bloody long way to go, isn't it? I can't be bothered with that.
No, I...
So,
yeah, it must come down there often enough.
Yes, this is true. Yeah, but you live up north. It's dangerous there.
It's not.
There's wild animals and thugs and things. I see it
it's all rumour and hearsay.
I see it on the news all the time.
Oh, if you're not such southern softies, you'd be all right.
And also, isn't there loads of pollution from the factories chucking out, you know, toxic gases and stuff?
Yeah, well, you see, though, if the ice caps melt and we flood, you're going to go first.
That is true.
They're higher up than you.
Yeah, but whenever I think about the north, I always have this image of a post-apocalyptic kind of barren wasteland anyway. So you know, it's all sorts of roundabouts.
That's Scotland. You're going too far now.
Anyway, it's really good to have you on the show. I actually listened to last week's show, which was solid waffle, but very entertaining nonetheless.
We'll try his best.
It was good. I really enjoyed it. I particularly enjoyed the horrendous swearing after the outro music.
Oh, you just got to... Anna's just so good at all the editing she does. It was constant throughout. I really feel sorry for her.
That was... She worked hard, didn't she, on that one?
I had to ring her up and apologise personally for that one.
Oh, well. So, yeah, we were chatting on IM. And you asked a question. Do you want to share what it was that you asked or what the issue was?
Well, as you know, I've been recording my own series of video interviews called Please Start From the Beginning. And you were the first person I interviewed.
It was very boring. Have you started editing them down since then, or has other people been more concise?
They're getting longer.
Really?
I think the Dan Rubin holds the record at 50 minutes.
Flip me!
But he's also been the most interesting interview. He's had the most hits and the most traffic.
Really?
Yeah. So everybody likes to hear Mr. Rubin waffle.
Well, I think Marcus should be pretty good when you get to do him with his whole pop star career.
It keeps putting me off, you know. Out of everybody, you know, I can get all the, you know, it's like he's the hardest one to nail down.
Yeah.
I've been asking him since the week I interviewed you, and, you know, I've done 10 interviews now, and I just can't nail him down.
So the basic principle of the show is you ask people about their past and how they got where they've got.
Yeah, their career path. So it's nothing technical. It's something a little bit different in that I want to know what people do now, what the job title is the first question I ask, because I think it's interesting to hear about what people's different job titles are, because there's so many different variants of the same thing in the industry.
Yeah.
So I ask that first, and then discuss what they do now, and then ask them to go back to the beginning, hence the title of the series, and take me through their career path and what experiences they have, what lucky breaks, what achievements, and so far it's working out really well, and people seem to like talking about themselves.
Well, yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? So what was your kind of, as we were chatting, do you want to say what the question was that you know, what was it that you were getting at from or wanted from me?
The question was, how can I kind of advertise the series a little bit better? How can I get more people watching it? The uptake so far has been really good. I've had some really good feedback, and people are kind of linking to it and spreading the word a little bit on Twitter. But for a lowly guy like me with less than 400 followers, it's hard when I tweet and you've only got potentially 400 people who see it. So the number of people coming to the site is it's good. It's better than I've ever had. But I'd like more people seeing the videos and commenting and spreading the word. So yeah. And someone like yourself with 9,000 followers, you know, it's very easy for you to spread the word about things. And I was wondering how you built your way up with Boag World, and if I could do something similar with Please Start from the Beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a problem a lot of people have. You know, they've got some particular, website or application or service that they're offering, and that, you know, they're wanting to build up a bit of a buzz. And I mean, you know, I'm not that high up the food chain if you compare me with, Mr. Carson or some of the guys over in America that seem to find it very easy to create buzz and excitement about a product. But I guess I've picked up a few things that have worked for me. I think the first one that's really struck me is patience. You know, you haven't been doing that this long, long, have you?
Absolutely. No, not been doing it too long. It's been, so far, I mean, just released the 8th video, and it's been steady. It's traffic and interest has been a steady level. It's not like a huge, yeah. It's not like it's going up every week, you know. For example, I release them every Monday, and I obviously get a surge of traffic on a Monday as everybody comes to visit. That tapers off towards the end of the week, and then the next Monday I get a surge of traffic. And I suppose there's going to be more traffic with more interest of people who are more in the public eye, like Ryan Carson, for example. There'd be a spike more in traffic. At least I thought there would be, but everybody seems to just be interested in everybody, which is quite interesting. So it seems to be the same every Monday. There seems to be, you know, the same amount of traffic coming to watch that video, despite who the person is.
Well, that to some degree might be down to how much the person being interviewed is actually pimping what you've done. I mean, you've got a good model in the sense that you've got, you know, you've got a situation where you're interviewing well-known individuals, which works really well as a technique, because if they do mention it and if they do push it themselves, then it's going to drive traffic to your site and hopefully get people hooked on the other ones. But yeah, I mean, that's only kind of part of the equation, isn't it, really? I mean, to be honest, it was a long time before I actually saw much traffic on Boag World at all. I mean, I reckon it was over a year before, I got much over the 400, 600 subscriber number.
Right.
So it was a long, long time before anything really happened. And you just need to keep plugging away and to release regularly and release often. You're on iTunes now, aren't you?
Yes, yes. I finally got the series on iTunes. And the uptake for that's been pretty good as well. You know, people jumped on that straight away. So and that's slowly increasing, which is nice. So, yeah, searchable on iTunes under Please Start From the Beginning.
This is sounding like a massive big plug from the beginning. But on the other hand, it is also, hopefully this is useful stuff for other people, because other people are in the same kind of position. And we've already given one tip, which is this idea of, you know, produce content which has got experts, you know, in that have a big following because they're going to talk about it, which is one good thing. I mean, the other thing that I think a big part of it is your own reputation as well. It's easier for me if I launch something new, right? I don't know, let me say I started a new podcast or launched a new website. It's going to be relatively easy for me to create some buzz around that because I've already got 9,000 followers on Twitter, because I already know other people and are friendly with names that will actually promote it themselves, you know, if I ask them to. If your own reputation matters quite a lot as well. And I think the fact that you're building up quite a good network of people that you know, and don't be afraid to ask those people to kind of pimp it a little bit. And this, I think, is where you're really going to see the payoff from all that time you spent going to conferences and meeting people and chatting with people, you know, because, you know, you're becoming a name that people are aware of. There's another tip, is to take the time to kind of build up your own personal brand and your own reputation and, you know, to attend conferences and stuff like that, because people will take more of an interest in what you're doing. Take, for example, only this week, that the fact that Clear Left have released Font Deck. Now, because it's Clear Left that's done it, they've got a lot more publicity if they've just been some, you know, some other web app that has just been launched. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's. I mean, like with anything, I suppose building up your reputation again takes time, doesn't it?
And, yeah.
I do have this slight fear of kind of ramming it down people's throats, which I don't want to do. I want people to come and watch the videos and participate because, you know, kind of without feeling coerced into doing so, you know. Mm. But, you know, so I don't want to be tweeting all the time about it and things like that. And I've been looking at some people have kind of retweeted, and nearly everybody I've interviewed tweeted to say that there's an interview there. So if and when people see that tweet, they tend to click through. But it's for kind of, I suppose it's for people who maybe miss that tweet. Because at the minute, it seems to be like Twitter is the main thing that's driving traffic to my site for the series. And I was wondering if there's anything else I could be doing to kind of to advertise it and, you know, for people to find it kind of naturally.
I mean, that's the trouble, isn't it, with Twitter, is that, you know, something will get missed. Because you've just got this stream of stuff. And I think there's a couple of things to say on that before we move on to other things you could do. But I will actually tweet about something multiple times, right? But I'll do it in subtly different ways, okay? So, for example, I'll initially tweet and say I've just put up, you know, in your case, this video. Then later in the day, I'll say, you know, I maybe quote some of the comments that have been made, if any comments have been made on the video, you know, and I maybe refer back to it a couple of days later as well. You know, I've been really pleased with the level of traffic or whatever, just in order to bring it up a few times. So that's one thing that I do. The other thing is pick your times for actually tweeting about it, right? And that's where something like using something like Bitly, where you can track traffic, is really worthwhile, because that enables you to kind of monitor the different links that you're tweeting out and notice which time of day gets the best level of traffic for you. So, for example, in my case, I know that if I tweet at around about between 5 and 8 o'clock in the evening UK time, I will get the most click-throughs on whatever I do. And the reason for that is because the people in the UK have just finished work and are kind of at home having their tea, checking Twitter while they're there, and they've got time to look at stuff. And in America, and, but yeah, all of the people in America that follow me have just woken up and are around now and kind of, you know, that their traffic is added to it in addition. So thinking about when you Twitter is quite important as well.
That's interesting, because I've been releasing the episodes around about 11:30, just before lunchtime.
Right.
So people could kind of watch you over lunch if they wanted to.
Yeah, but that doesn't particularly suit the American audience.
No.
And America is a big audience, you know, that especially, I mean, you've been interviewing people in America as well, so I think that's kind of even more important for you. Yeah. I'll tell you, the other thing you might want to do is, the people that speak, right, that you've got coming on the show, I presume you write to them and you email them when their show goes live, or at least you should do.
Yes, I do.
Right. Including that, the embed code, in case they want to put the video on their site.
All right, okay.
Because that then enables them, you know, gives them some content that's easy and quick to put up on their site, and also would give you more exposure as well. And it's in the blog, so it's permanent rather than on Twitter, where it kind of then just disappears over time.
Uh-huh.
So that might be another good way of doing it. What else could you do? How else do I build buzz? I mean, the other part of it is building the community as well. That at the moment you've just got, you're at the early days and you've got visitors,
yeah.
Rather than actually a community. So, for example, I now have people that regularly come back to my site, whatever I post, really. I mean, you want to look at some ways of building up that community in the comments and stuff like that. You want to give people the opportunity. Part of the way of building a community is making people feel involved in it. So the way that you do that is you say, hey, why don't you suggest some people that I could interview? What kind of questions should I ask them? Encourage people to put comments on the video, maybe ask some questions in order to encourage that commenting. That's always a good thing you can do. And then, of course, in addition to that as well, maybe, you know, run a competition where you get people to write in and suggest themselves why you should interview them, not just interview web celebrities, but interview some ordinary designers as well, or some people, you know, that have been in the industry since the beginning but aren't necessarily well-known names. So anything to kind of draw the community together. Because once people feel like they're involved in, you know, the BOAG world or start at the beginning, once they feel like that they've got an ownership in it, then they're going to start promoting it themselves. And that's where, you know, word of mouth recommendation really comes in, because, you know, people are enthusiastic about it.
Okay, that's a good idea. I have been trying to contact and target people, not necessarily, I mean, a majority of the people I've been interviewing have been kind of, you know, web celebs, but I'm trying to get all different kinds of people, but also all different types of profession within the industry. So I'm hoping to interview a copywriter and, you know, maybe a journalist for the web industry, and all the different people, you know, and their takes, really, on the industry and how they ended up getting involved with it, to try and get as much of a diverse kind of catalogue of people as possible. So yeah, I like that idea of talking to different people, because, you know, like you said, people don't have to be kind of a web celeb or a big speaker or an A-list person to have an interesting story of what they've been doing. And yeah, it's a good idea. I like that.
I mean, the other aspect to this, mine, is looking for influencers. So those are individuals that have a big network and a lot of influence. So going back to, say, Twitter, for example, you know, a lot of people go on about, you know, oh, you've got 9,000 followers or you've got 12,000 followers or whatever else. But actually, the number of followers you've got is less important than who is following you. If you can kind of get at if you can get certain key influencers to mention your product or service or website, then they'll reach a much bigger audience. So, for example, you take somebody like Jeremy Keith, is a good example of this. His number of followers is actually less than mine, yet the people that do follow him are in turn big influencers themselves. So his kind of reach is much bigger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got kind of, go on.
Going to say kind of quality over quantity.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. What else could you do? I mean, the main thing is, it's a time thing, has to be said. You've just got to keep plugging away, being regular, posting, you know, not giving up on the project. Because a lot of people do that, you know, especially with blogs as well, they do that. They do it for a while and then they give up because they're not getting the returns that they want out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe try writing for things like Smashing Magazine or SitePoint or the Web Designers Depot and write about career paths or things that are relevant to what it is that you're doing. I mean, the guys at Smashing Magazine are always looking for content because they've got this kind of beast that needs feeding, you know, on a daily basis. I mean, I know that you've tried potentially to write some stuff for .NET Magazine, but I have to say, probably .NET Magazine isn't the best place to start because they're a monthly publication, which means they can be a lot more picky about what they have in. Also, they're very reliant on big names, right? While you don't care about, it's not the name that you're trying to build up, it's this particular product. And actually have got less of a reach, in other words, they've got less subscribers than something like Smashing Magazine or Web Designers Depot. So I would go for trying to write for some of them.
That's another interesting idea. The whole idea for this series stemmed from kind of the fog around job titles and, you know, how people just kind of pick a name for themselves, like yourself, web strategist.
Yeah.
You know, nobody, you know, it's so ambiguous all the time, and that's where I think people starting out in the industry, especially, that's where it started off as. People who are just coming to the industry don't know what they want to be because there's no kind of defined roles.
Well, just like you were talking about last week's show.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where it stems from. I've been thinking about this for quite a while, which is why I started putting the series together. So, the series, it's great that it is in a way, I suppose, a self promotion of myself, but it started off. From an interest, and it still is. I'm enjoying doing it because it interests me hearing about other people's career paths, and that's why, like I say, I'm not. I want to interview interesting people that don't necessarily have to be hugely popular people. So I like the idea of writing about, and I think that'll be the natural progression. Once I get a few more interviews done, and I've got a bit more kind of raw data to work with, an article about career paths and things will be something in the pipeline.
I mean, a backlog of material is really important as well.
I mean,
I've got people that start from show one and are still working their way through, and obviously then that increases the number of hits as, you know, visitors, because people are going back episode after episode. I mean, the other thing you've got to think about, which is the big problem that I had, which is the one of getting it transcribed so that, you know, it's good from a search engine point of view as well as an accessibility point of view. So, but that's a big old challenge doing that until you've got a community like I'm fortunate enough to have that are helping out and supporting it. It's really difficult doing that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But anyway, I think at that point we probably ought to wrap it up because otherwise this is going to be the longest show ever recorded. But hopefully there's some useful stuff in there. Hopefully there was some stuff as well for other people listening as well. It's given you a little bit of a glimpse into how the consultancy clinics we do work. And I think I'd like to do this again. So if you have a web project or you want some advice on something or whatever it is, then write in to paul@boagworld.com and once in a while we'll pick one and we'll do an interview type scenario like this and see how it works out. What do you think, Ryan? Good idea?
Yeah, very good idea. I think that would be really useful for people.
Excellent. Then I guess we need to move on and endure Marcus's joke. Boagworld.com. Right. That was good. I like talking to Ryan. He's quite nice, despite my rudeness about him.
He's quite nice.
He's quite nice. That's as much as I'm willing to commit. It's these people that give up their time for free to help produce the show are just rude to them. Oh, well, they get free tickets to conferences. What more do they want?
Just carry on, Paul.
Dig. I'm digging lots of holes this week. Have you got your joke? I'm only filling because I know you haven't got your joke on screen.
I have.
You have
now. I had
now.
It the whole time.
No, you didn't. I saw you clicking around randomly trying to find it. It's been a while since you've done a joke. No, have you noticed nobody else does jokes on the show?
I haven't, no. Sorry, I'm pretending that I'm trying to find something.
Yeah, you're not. I know you're not.
I'm so easy to read.
Yeah.
I was just looking around for a joke this morning and there weren't any actual jokes.
You were about to say there weren't any good ones. People have sent you hundreds of jokes.
Have they?
I don't know, but have they?
No, they haven't.
Do they not send you that many?
I guess.
You're supposed to say, yes, I get hundreds, because then it makes it sound like the show's really popular.
I do get a lot of jokes.
Okay.
I don't get... And this is so... the irony of me. They're not that good.
Yes. Yes. There is real irony there.
Yes. So there are... Or they're not suitable.
Yeah, you get quite a few that aren't broadcastable.
Exactly. So, although,
do you know, talking about not broadcastable, Anna had to beep out half of last week's show from what I could gather.
I must actually listen to it.
It is funny. It's a good one. But when you listen to it, you have to listen through the end music because there's an outtake on the end, which I tell you is solid beeps. It's like, you can't actually, I heard the unedited version, that's the only reason you can understand it, because the edited one is beeped so heavily that you can't actually follow half the stuff that's going on about.
So, yeah, potty mouths, why can't they just talk without using swear words?
I know, it's disgraceful.
Well, it would be much more fun to swear a lot, but then I'd have more work to do.
So, yes, could go explicit, but I don't think we want to. I don't want to, really. I don't swear very much.
Anyway, carry on talking, because actually what I've got to do is read something.
You haven't read the... No. This is terrible.
This is basically, sometimes you get quotes and things like that. This is,
right.
This is entitled Mini Stories from the Imbecile Factor.
Right.
And a couple of them made me laugh. Somewhere in California, Stephen Richard King was arrested for trying to hold up a Bank of America branch without a weapon.
Do you get arrested just because you didn't have a weapon in America?
No idea. King used a thumb and a finger to simulate a gun, but unfortunately he failed to keep his hand in his pocket. It's just classic.
Stick him up.
That's brilliant. Anyway, so yes, that made me giggle. The rest of them, I should have saved that one till the end. But a man spoke frantically into the phone. My wife is pregnant and her contractions are only 2 minutes apart. Is this her first child? The doctor asked. No, the man shouted. This is her husband.
Yeah, that's just... I feel sorry for that guy. I'm panicking.
All right, one more. This is a true story, okay?
Yeah,
last summer...
Really?
Yeah, it's true. True. I read it on the internet.
Did you? Yeah. You contacted all the people involved to...
Absolutely.
Yeah, to establish the validity of the story.
Yes, and spoke to their relatives and everything. Yeah. And their friends went around their houses. Last summer, down on Lake Isabella, located in the high desert, and why do I care about this? It's California again. Some folks new to boating were having a problem. No matter how hard they tried, they couldn't get their brand new 22-foot Bayliner to perform. It was very sluggish in almost every manoeuvre, no matter how much power was applied. After about an hour of trying to make it go, they putted over to a nearby marina, thinking someone there could help tell them what was wrong. A thorough topside check revealed everything in perfect order. The engine ran fine, the outdrive went up and down, the prop was the correct size and pitch. So one of the marina guys jumped into the water to check underneath. He came up, choking on water, he was laughing so hard. Remember, this is true. Under the boat, still strapped securely in place, was the trailer. That's cracking,
isn't
it?
Do you know, I believe that. I can imagine somebody doing that.
Going down, you know, the old slope into the water. Well, that's what they're meant for, isn't it? So it drives along the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. It's the way boats work.
Anyway,
yes,
I can't talk. There's 10 of them, but that'll
it's
do.
It's interesting that both of those were Americans. I'm just saying.
I'm going to buy you a nice shiny spade for your birthday.
Yeah, I don't care. People laugh at my ignorance. Right. True. Thank you very much for listening to this week's show. Will we be returning next week? We will.
Yes.
2 weeks.
And
on
then
the
you're
trot.
Going on holiday again.
Yeah, I know. Well, some of us have got busy lives. I'm popular. People want my time.
So what's happening then?
I'm going to sit in a field with 12,000
No,
teenagers.
No, no. What's happening with the podcast then?
Ryan and Paul are doing it again.
Again?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was quite enjoying it.
Dan will be pleased.
That's true.
We've got one happy listener.
But no, I'm enjoying myself today. So it's next week and then that's it.
That's kicked, all you get. Well, you can do it. You could be their guest. Seriously. Mm. Because they've got a fancy, they've got a proper sound system thing.
Yeah.
And they can have people dial in because Sarah's always on it on the telephone. Be their guest. That'd be cool.
I could do that.
Do it.
All right.
Right.
Done.
Good. Why are we talking like this?
I don't know.
You started it.
Did I?
Well, I was born like it. Right, thank you very much for listening to this week's show, and we will return again next week, as I said several minutes ago. Bye.
Hello, world of Boaz. It's like being on David Letterman.
Boag world!
Join our forum at boagworld.com/forum.